to the City Planning Commission review session.
Jeff, begin recording. Before we begin our agenda, we have a presentation by Elizabeth Glazer of the Mayor's Office of Criminal Justice.
Good morning, Chair Lago, and good morning, Commissioners. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be able to present to you a little bit of the context of our application. Sorry, is this the?
Yep.
This is what does it? Great. Thanks. So today, New York City is engaged in what is really the biggest criminal justice reform effort that our city has seen in multiple decades. And we've seen some results already of those efforts. Crime and incarceration have been driven to record lows. The fairness of the system, while we still have a ways to go, is increasing. And building borough-based jails is a key part of this strategy. And part of fundamentally rethinking, as we have done over the past 5 years, who should be in jail and what jail should look like, both inside and outside. Sorry. All right. So foundationally, one of the major issues here for us is focused on how many people should be in jail and who they should be. And there's been a remarkable sea change in our city over the past 5 years as every part of our system has lightened the touch of enforcement. And the results have been that today New York City has the lowest incarceration rate of any big city in the nation. And our goal now is to reach what we think will be the safest, fairest and smallest population that we can under the current system, which is 5,000 people by 2027. And just to give you a sense, when the mayor first took office 5 years ago, we were somewhere north of 11,000 people incarcerated in the city's jails. Today, we are at about 7,800. We think that So part of this criminal justice effort is surely reducing the population, changing the culture of what the jails are inside, and also building new facilities. For us, we believe that this is a moral imperative because our reform efforts are limited by our current facilities. These are old designs that do not permit for programming. They do not have the kinds of layouts that permit for safe supervision. They are far away from families, from service providers, from lawyers. And the very distance itself leads to delays in the length of the case, and the longer a case lasts, the higher the population is. So our goals here are to build jails that are fairer, that provide that kind of access, that provide those kinds of rehabilitative facilities, that permit for programming and appropriate health care and education, that are safer because we will have an opportunity to build the kinds of facilities that are suitable to 21st century jails, and that reduce violence by the very nature of both the culture change that we are deeply engaged in and by the very design of the jails, and that are more efficient, reducing the kinds of delays that I've referred to, ensuring that that people who are incarcerated have access to their attorneys and to other service providers. And now we're going to take a walk down memory lane. So these were slides perhaps that were at the beginning, but here you'll see these very, very steep drops that our jail population we've seen in our jail population down more than half since its peak in 1991, and as I mentioned, down about 30% since the mayor took office, with a goal of 5,000 by 2027. And the way in which these population reductions happened was really as a result of every part of the justice system changing its behavior. So judges simply there were investments in different kinds of diversion opportunities. So instead of jail, judges could put people into community-based programs, both pretrial and instead of a sentence. Big investments and efforts by the entire system to reduce the length that cases take, a sort of joint effort with defenders and prosecutors, courts, and the Department of Corrections. Big investments in bail reform efforts that have dropped by 60% the number of people in jails who are being held on very low amounts of bail, and big targeted efforts around reducing the population of women, adolescents, and people with mental and behavioral health issues. And we have real hopes that should the legislative reform packages that are now pending in Albany, particularly those around bail, but also around speedy trial and discovery and parole, if those were to pass, that would also have a significant impact on our population. And as I mentioned, population is important, but culture change also has to happen, and that means both investing in programming, 5 hours of programming for incarcerated people, as well as an array of other things, and also investing in the people who work in the city's jails, ensuring that they're able to operate at the highest level of professionalism. So since we announced the plan, there has been an intense amount of engagement with obviously the ULURP process still ahead of us and a lot more engagement to come. So the city has created multiple different forums, neighborhood advisory committees that started meeting, the first ones in November. These are comprised of an array of community leaders who get together on a monthly basis. We've met with hundreds of individuals, elected officials, community-based organizations, and we set up about a year ago a justice implementation task force that encompasses about 70 system players and other interested people in the justice system who are focusing in three areas: on population reduction, on the culture change inside, and on design. The Neighborhood Advisory Committees, or the NACs, have now been convened in the four boroughs, and they are in the process of producing guidelines and principles. This is a document that will help us together identify what those key opportunities are for community investment, community centers, cultural centers, parks, how to improve facilities that will be integrated into the neighborhoods, and how to use designated community-related facility space within each facility. And this is an idea of just some of the people that we've been engaged in. And I know that you're going to get a more detailed program, but just to sort of hit some of the top lines, what the proposed plan is to go from what we currently have, which is 11 jails operating citywide. Those 11 jails now have a capacity for over 11,000 people, and we would move from that to four jails with a capacity of less than half that, 5,000. In order to build for 5,000 people, we'll have to build 5,750 beds. That accounts for the possibility that some cells may not be operational or out of service, that we have to separate men from women and sentence people from non-sentenced, and other space needs. And so the concept here is that the jails themselves will have the kind of space that you're seeing here, and designed in a way that would reduce what we have seen has been a kind of cycle of violence. Education programs, a kind of dignified admissions process, robust medical screening, reentry programs, and other facilities. And the notion is that these, the entry point for the jails would promote these qualities of a dignified and humane facility that would have information kiosks, visiting areas, there we go, and other kinds of amenities. So as a result of the engagement that we've had so far, there have already been some reductions in height and density, a reduction of about 150 feet over the three boroughs, and you can see it there. Part of that has been, as I mentioned, reducing what's called that efficiency rate, meaning how many beds do you have to build for how many people, to what is really more in line with an industry standard of about 15%. So that removed about 250 beds. Centralizing women in a Queens facility, this was this decision was made after pretty intensive engagement with incarcerated women, advocates, service providers, and an array of others, and removing the arraignment court from the Bronx facility. And we'll obviously continue to explore other opportunities to reduce the height without affecting the program. So the four sites are in Manhattan on White Street and Brooklyn on Atlantic Avenue, Queens in Kew Gardens in the Court Civic Center, and Bronx at the NYPD Toe Pound. And this is just going to give you, these are conceptual, these are not designs, but this gives you some sense of how we would anticipate integrating the jails into neighborhoods so that they have a kind of scale at the street level that is inviting to the neighborhood. This is Manhattan looking north on Center Street, and you see on the right White Street, which is the street that connects the Civic Center to Chinatown. This is, again, a conceptual rendering of what the jail in Brooklyn might look like, also like the Manhattan site, built on the site of the existing jail here on Atlantic Avenue. In the Bronx, this is on the site, as I mentioned, of the Toe Pound. And in Queens, this is on the site of the existing jail, which is currently just used for day, for people who are incarcerated who are coming to court during the day. So that's the basic frame and context that we're seeing this in. And depending on, Chair, how you are running this, I'd be happy to answer questions now or later.
I think it makes sense to have the department now present the actions that are before us and then have you join them for answering questions from the commission.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay. This begins the review session for the New York City Planning Commission of Monday, March 25th, 2019. The time is 1:14 and a quorum is present. The first item on the agenda is a certification of a zoning map and zoning text amendments, site selection, UDAP designation, disposition of city-owned property, special permits, acquisition, and city map amendments in the Bronx Community District 1, Brooklyn Community District 2, Manhattan Community District 1, and Queens Community District 9. Our presenters are Frank Rashala, and in her first presentation to the commission, Taylor Wolfson.
All right. Good afternoon, commissioners. Just before Taylor and I start, we just wanted to go over the run-through of how we'll go through the project, just given the variety of actions and this kind of complicated nature. First, just generally more specifics on the system itself, kind of sites, kind of overall sizes, and kind of the just kind of general scale of each location. Looking then at the actions at what we would call the system-wide level actions, kind of look being utilized on each of the four sites, and then speak particularly about the individual site actions for each of the four borough locations, and then lastly talk about the environmental review, which the DEIS, which came out on Friday for this. I'm going to turn it over to Taylor to actually begin the first part, talking about the system itself, and then come back talking about the system actions.
Okay. Good afternoon. So as Frank mentioned, I will first provide an overview of the four proposed jail sites that will make up the system. And again, the aim is to close the jails on Rikers Island and open new for new and modern facilities that better fit the needs of the jail population. The proposed jail site in the Bronx is located at 745 East 141st Street in the Mott Haven neighborhood in the Southeast Bronx, the current location of the NYPD Bronx Tow Pound. The tow pound would be replaced with the new facility that has 1,437 beds and support space, 10,000 square feet of court-related space, 40,000 square feet of community facility and or retail space, 575 accessory parking spaces, a maximum height of 245 feet, and a mixed-use affordable housing development adjacent to the jail along Concord Avenue. The proposed jail site in Brooklyn is at 275 Atlantic Avenue in downtown Brooklyn, the current location of the Brooklyn Detention Complex. The Brooklyn Detention Complex would be demolished and replaced with a new facility that has 1,437 beds and support space, 30,000 square feet of community facility and or retail space, 292 accessory parking spaces, and a maximum height of 395 feet. The proposed jail site in Manhattan is at 124-125 White Street in Lower Manhattan, the current location of the Manhattan Detention Complex, Center Complex, both MDC North and South. MDC North and South would both be demolished and replaced with a new facility that has 1,437 beds and support space, 20,000 square feet of community facility and or retail space, 125 accessory parking spaces, a maximum height of 450 feet, and in addition, White Street, which currently separates MDC North and South, would become a pedestrian-only street. The proposed jail site in Queens is at 12602 82nd Avenue in the Kew Gardens neighborhood, the current location of the decommissioned Queens Detention Complex and an adjacent surface parking lot. QDC would be demolished and replaced with a new facility that has 1,437 beds and support space, including centralized care services, 25,000 square feet of community facility and or retail space, 605 accessory parking spaces, as well as an adjacent public parking garage with 676 spaces and a maximum height of 270 feet. In summary, each of the facilities would have an equal number of beds, 1,437, and be approximately the same size, about 1.1 million square feet, though the heights of the facilities would vary depending on the lot size. A portion of the ground floor would be set aside for retail and/or community service space to liven the streets and be integrated with the surrounding area. There is flexibility in the allowable uses to meet the individual needs of each community. Accessory parking would be provided for all staff. Frank will discuss the sites in further detail later in the presentation. Before diving into the land use actions, the department would like to note the unique circumstances regarding the design of the proposed project. In 2018, New York State approved design build authority for New York City for three projects, including the borough-based jail system. This project is the first design project to go through ULURP. The purpose of design build is to save time and money. For traditional projects, an applicant hires one team to design the project and then another team to build the project. However, for design build, one team works under a single contract to provide both design and construction services. The design build teams be brought on board after ULURP has been completed. The city's plan is to construct the new facilities and close the jails on Rikers Island by 2027. The time saved through design build would make this possible. And now Frank will talk about the specific land use actions necessary to facilitate the project.
Okay, so first, the first action is a single public facility site selection that would approve the siting of the four borough-based jails. In the Bronx, that would the new facility would replace and expand the capacity of capacity located elsewhere in the borough, in Brooklyn, Manhattan, and Queens, as Taylor pointed out. The facilities would replace the existing facilities in each of those boroughs and expand their on-site capacity. In total, the system would have a capacity of 5,748 beds. That would also include support spaces, related functions, as well as parking for each of the facilities. The proposal required a fair share analysis, which is provided as part of your briefing package. Second, as part of the application, would be a zoning text amendment to create a new special permit. That special permit would allow modifications of various zoning regulations to allow the borough-based jail system to be developable on each of the sites. I'll walk through the text of the permit just as a way to, as we walk through the rest of the application. First, only sites that are part of the site selection application, and it's kind of list the actual number, the ULURP number, would be able to utilize this permit. This kind of ensures that it is really only for these sites. It would allow modification of regulations for use, bulk, parking, and floor area and loading regulations as necessary, and will go subject to the findings of the rest of the permit. Starting first with use, any use modification would have to support the operation of the facility and be compatible with the surrounding area. Second, B talks about that the uses in total, not just those that are being modified, but that all the uses on the ground floor have to be located in a manner that is inviting to the public and intended to integrate the facility within the surrounding community. While looking at the drawings associated with the special permit, the permit on the ground floor, the drawings establish the locations of public entrances, retail, parking, and loading, and staff entrances as a way to ensure that various kind of services to the building are located on specific frontages. There would also be minimum design standards for retail and curb cut space and community spaces along specific frontages for each of the four sites. For bulk modifications, these include both modifications increasing the overall permitted floor area on each of the sites, as well as modifications for things like sky exposure planes or other height and setback regulations. Any increase in floor area would have to facilitate the development of the facility. The bulk modifications would also have to improve the interior layout and function of the facility, and any bulk modifications, including the floor area, would have to have a minimal adverse effect on access to light and air and open spaces in the surrounding area. Findings related to parking and loading would focus on the concerns about serious traffic congestion being caused by any of those facilities, and modifications for public parking garages would be required to have minimum amounts of reservoir spaces pursuant to kind of typical public parking facilities through special permits. And then last, as in all permits, the commission would have the ability to add additional conditions and safeguards for the projects. So those are the two sort of system-wide applications. They would be referred out to all four of the sites affected. And then the individual site actions, as those affect the individual lots and blocks and lots that we're talking about, would each be referred out to themselves individually. We'll start in the Bronx and then go go through the rest of the four. Generally, as a sort of way to keep sort of overall tabs on all of the different actions, the first part describes those system-wide actions, right, the site selection and the text amendment itself, and then for each of the individual boroughs, the actions that are being sought. Each of the sites requires the special permit or applies for the special permit, and then for three of the sites, there are city map change applications. In the Bronx, which doesn't have a city map change, there was actually, as Taylor described, a proposal for a mixed-use development on a portion of the existing Towpound lot to allow for a mixed-use development. That requires specific zoning map text changes to create an MIH district, as well as HPD dispositions. And then last, in the Manhattan context, there is an acquisition for an existing long-term lease on the site of the existing MDC facility. Starting in the Bronx, as Taylor described, the site is the location of the existing NYPD Towpound in the Bronx, in the Mount Haven neighborhood of Bronx CB1, located adjacent to the Bruckner Expressway to the southeast. The area itself is currently zoned M13 and is actually located in an IBZ area. Just to the west is a more residential character. To the west, the area becomes much more residential in character. The Towpound itself sort of can be seen from the photos, sort of has a sort of, it's no buildings on it, it's just essentially is a Towpound. It's kind of blocked off by fences from everything around it. As Taylor described, the general proposal is for the 1,437-bed facility with various ground floor uses and accessory parking amounts with a maximum overall height of 245 feet. Entrance, which would be, and sort of access to the lot, which would be, is enshrined in the special permit. Along 141st Street, moving west to east, staff entrance to accessory parking would be located first, that's shown in blue. The rest of the 141st Street entrance frontage would be devoted to retail and or community space, as well as actually a small court facility that would also be located at that corner. On 142nd Street, staff would be entering the facility to the west, and then the main visitor entrance, kind of located closest to the subway at Southern Boulevard, would be located at the northeast corner. Access to loading and the Sallyport would be from a sort of alleyway at the western end of the block, also helping sellers separate the facility from the mixed-use development on the western edge. While in an M13 district, buildings of the height proposed are actually permitted, subject to the sky exposure planes. The proposal requires modifications of sky exposure planes to allow the building to be to take up the bulk of the site. The special permit would allow a maximum height of 245 feet for roof height, with an additional 40 feet for mechanical spaces, as well as horticultural services, which sometimes exist on the roofs of DOC facilities. In summary, while in an M13 district, the maximum commercial FAR is 5, the proposed special permit would allow a maximum of 7.75. Up to the maximum height of 245 as described. Accessory parking is permitted a maximum of 150 spaces. In an M13 district, the permit proposes a maximum of 575 spaces for staff on site. Loading is generally 3 loading berths are required for a facility of this size in an M district, but only 2 would be provided. A lot of this is really stemming from the fact that the Sallyport is not technically considered a loading berth, but though it's being provided, that's kind of it's creating the discrepancy. And in an M district, community facility uses are not permitted, but the proposal is that community facility uses be possible on the ground floor, and so a maximum of 40,000 square feet of community facility use will be permitted here. Second, on the western 100 feet of the frontage along Concord Avenue would be the location of the proposed mixed-use development. To facilitate this, the proposal calls for a rezoning of the western frontage from an M13 district to an M14 R7X district as an MX district. The MX district would allow a maximum residential FAR of 6 with MIH and 2 FAR for permitted manufacturing uses. The rezoning would facilitate approximately 235 units of affordable housing, as well as ground floor space that would, of approximately 31,000 square feet, which would either be community facility and or retail space. And as described, the required zoning map and text amendments, as well as an HPD UDAP to facilitate the mixed-use project. Moving to Brooklyn, 275 Atlantic Avenue, the site of the existing Brooklyn House of Detention, located along Atlantic Avenue, really at the edge separating downtown Brooklyn from the more residential neighborhoods of Cobble and Borum Hill to the south. The facility sort of located in site photos kind of showing that different context, both along Atlantic, north and south of the facility. As described previously, it would again be a 1,437-bed facility, 30,000 square feet of ground floor community facility or retail space, 292 accessory parking spaces, again around a size of 1.1 million square feet, and approximately or the maximum roof height of 395 feet. Access to the facility along Atlantic Avenue, retail and community facility spaces would be provided. The visitor entrance would be permitted along Borum Place on the western end of the site. Staff would be at the northwest corner of the site at the intersection of State and Borum. And the northeast corner and the sort of eastern portion would be devoted to vehicular access, both for staff parking as well as the sort of loading and sally port for the facility. Here, it's a C62A district, and so the maximum permitted height typically of a residential building is 125 feet. The proposal requests a maximum height of 395 feet for maximum roof height, plus 40 additional feet for mechanical space above. In total, commercial FAR in a C62A permitted is maximum of 6. The proposal requests a maximum of 17.95 to provide the facility, maximum height of 395 feet. Accessory parking, again, similarly in a C6 is permitted a maximum of 150 spaces. The proposal requests a maximum of 292 to facilitate for staff parking. Loading typically would be 4 berths, only 2 would be provided. Ground floor uses in the Atlantic Avenue area of downtown Brooklyn are not permitted on ground floors, and so as a modification, this would permit community facility use to be located at the ground floor level. Similarly, the transparency requirement on the ground floor of Atlantic Avenue is 50%. The proposal requests a maximum of 30% to address DOC safety concerns. Additionally, in the Brooklyn case, a city map change would demap a volume above and below State Street to allow access to connect both the new Brooklyn facility with the courthouse located just in the north of State Street. There is already an existing tunnel that connects the two facilities, but this would allow that to be expanded and further services to be provided below State Street. Above State Street, the expectation is possibly the location of bridges, but they would have to be located at a minimum of 40 feet in the air from State Street. And these are done to facilitate access between the courthouse and the facility itself. Into Manhattan, the facility would be located at the location of the existing MDC North and MDC South, which are currently separated by White Street, connected by bridge above, both of which are then connected by bridge to the courthouse further to the south, or in this drawing to the left. The facility sits at the sort of intersection between Chinatown to the east, the Civic Center complex to the south, as well as Tribeca to the west, and is located close to places like Columbus Park. And really, the access between along White Street really acts as a kind of major connector amongst all of these neighborhoods. The photo in the top right actually shows the existing White Street, which is generally kind of a location of a lot of parking, but actually is used heavily from a pedestrian perspective. Similarly, 1,437-bed facility, 20,000 square feet of community facility or retail space at grade, 125 parking spaces, about 1.1 million square feet of floor area, and a maximum height of 450 feet, and map changes to transform White Street into a pedestrian-only street. So here, with the existing courthouse now on the right, shows the two portions of the facility that would replace MDC North and South. They would, at grade, be separated by a reconfigured White Street. And zooming more into the facility itself, access would be provided to the facility for the public along Center Street as well as for staff. White Street would be predominantly sort of fronted by community facility or retail uses. To kind of provide for that kind of long, that continued access between the two streets. Staff parking would be accessed off of Baxter Street, and loading and the Sallyport would be accessed from the Sallyport to the Sallyport entrance, both on Center and on Baxter Street. Bridges would remain to connect the court facility to the, from the courthouse to the jail itself, similarly as today. This showing it in section, so the existing courthouse, bridges connecting, as well as the maximum roof height of 450 feet, with an additional approximately 40 feet for mechanical height space above that. In a C64 district, which this is, buildings can achieve a height of 450 feet. It's a tower district, so heights are unlimited here. But the proposal requests modifications of sky exposure planes to allow the building to kind of take up a larger area of the lot up to the maximum heights established. Commercial FAR in a C64 is permitted typically is 10. The proposal requests a maximum of 12.98. Again, while towers are permitted, this would actually subject the site to a maximum height of 450 feet. While accessory parking in the other sites are requested to be modified, they're actually below what is typically permitted, so that is not a requested waiver for accessory parking, while for loading, 4 berths are typically required, but only 2 would be provided. White Street would be, the mapping of White Street on the city map would be modified. White Street below grade would be demapped to allow connectivity between the two portions of the new north and south wings of the facility, as well as above a max a height of 36 feet to allow connectivity below, above that. Both of these being done to limit the overall size and height of the facilities themselves. The street would generally be sort of straightened a little bit, just a little kind of oddly angled on the city map, and it would have a maximum width of 35 feet and a maximum height of, as identified, 36 feet, and would be usable only for pedestrian access. It wouldn't be a sort of vehicular street, and would no longer be the kind of parking lot that it tends to be today. Additionally, in Manhattan, an additional acquisition action by DCAS is required to acquire an existing lease, long-term lease for retail space in the existing MDC North facility. The area is approximately 6,300 square feet, and there's more info in the application about it. Moving to Queens. The Queens location would be in the Kew Gardens neighborhood of Queens, in the Queens Civic Center. Both the existing QDC as well as the parking lot, just in this image to the sort of top left. The site is zoned C44 in its entirety, and the lot would be considered the entirety of both the courthouse, the parking lot, the and connecting them together. Photos of the existing QDC, which as Taylor described, is not used for sort of overnight stays. It's sometimes utilized as for people who are in at the courthouse that day, but it's not used in operational similarly to the, unlike the Manhattan and Brooklyn facilities. The proposal would, again, request, would have a maximum of 1,437 beds, 25,000 square feet of community space, 605 accessory parking spaces, general maximum size of 1.1 million square feet, maximum roof height of 270 spaces, as well as a public parking garage with a maximum of 676 spaces. As described, this would also be the location of centralized care services for the entirety of the borough-based jail system. You can see here how the facility would be located. To the top left would be the public parking garage, furthest away from the courthouse, then the jail facility itself, which would be similarly connected as it is today to the courthouse building. Looking at it from access, from the access perspective, visitors, staff, and community space would be located along 126th Street, while access to the public parking garage and the public accessory parking and accessory loading would be located on the sort of northern end of the site along 132nd Street. The proposal, while again in a C44 district like this, maximum heights are able to go higher than 270 feet, the proposal requires modifications of existing sky exposure plan regulations to allow a larger percentage of the lot to achieve that height. And so in line with that, the proposal proposes a maximum overall roof height of 270 feet with a maximum mechanical height of 310 feet above that. Overall, commercial FAR permitted in a C44 district is a maximum of 3.4. The special permit would propose a maximum FAR 4.63, again, with a maximum roof height of 270 spaces. While 150 accessory parking spaces are typically permitted in a C4 district, this would propose a maximum of 605 spaces. Loading would, again, require typically 4 berths, 2 would be provided. And while in a C4 district, 150 public parking spaces are typically permitted, the proposal requests a maximum of 676 spaces on the site itself. On the Queen site, the city map, there would be a proposed city map change to demap 82nd Street to allow the sort of location of the current QDC to be fully merged with the site of the current parking lot to the top left, allowing for a single site to be developed. So those are all the actions. Just want to speak for a sec on environmental review. The DEIS for the proposal was published last week. You have copies of the executive summary as well as the overall document in your briefing package. I'll go through the analysis looked at development of the facilities at each of the 4 locations separately. So I'll go through the various impacts that were identified for each of the facilities separately. In the Bronx case, no significant adverse impacts were identified for a number of analysis sections that were assessed. However, the potential for significant adverse impacts were found for traffic in the transportation chapter, as well as traffic, pedestrian, and noise under the construction chapter of the EIS. In Brooklyn, similarly, traffic for transportation, traffic, pedestrian, noise for construction, as well as the possibility of significant adverse impacts for historical and cultural resources because of the possibility of a bridge connecting the courthouse, which is a historic resource in the area. In Manhattan, similarly, potential impacts were identified for traffic, as well as pedestrians in the construction chapter, as well as historic and cultural resources because of the existing courthouse as a historic resource. And in Queens, the potential for significant adverse impacts were found for traffic, as well as for construction, for traffic, pedestrian, and noise. For all of these, a series of potential mitigation measures were identified, and similarly, as part of the move from a draft EIS to a final EIS, the city will continue to explore other opportunities to address potential impacts. So that is, in total, the various actions. This is just a summary of the actions, and we have a summary just of the facilities themselves. I think for now, we can open it up.
Actually, before opening it up for questions, I wanted to note that the Borough-Based Jails Initiative presents our commission with a number of novel issues, one of which is the fact that this is the first time that design-build is being used for a project that's going through ULURP. So to make sure that we get this right, the department has been working closely with DDC, the city's Department of Design and Construction, to develop a stakeholder engagement process that prioritizes getting input on design. DDC recently announced that it has procured a project management consultant team to lead the design-build project from start to finish. The team is a joint venture between AECOM and Hill West Architects. Part of the team is a design manager, Beverly Pryor, who is dedicated exclusively to design. Beverly Pryor is a fellow of the American Institute of Architects, and she is AECOM's justice lead. Previously, she had had her own architectural practice with extensive experience in criminal justice facilities. One of the design manager's most important responsibilities will be to engage directly with the community, coordinating charrettes for design professionals, leading public workshops, compiling stakeholder feedback into design recommendations for the selected design build teams. And I'm especially pleased, another responsibility of the design manager will be facilitating a design advisory group. This design advisory group is being created specifically for the Borough-Based Jails program to ensure that all of the design work that's been done to date, and that includes the design experts group that was co-led by Pernima Kapoor, as well as the feedback that's received during and after the ULURP process, that all of this input is factored into the proposed jail's design. Now, obviously, each of the jails is going to have its own neighborhood-specific features so that it integrates with its surroundings. But the final design considerations developed by the design advisory group will be essential in providing guidelines that can apply to all four facilities. The design advisory group is going to comprise 10 members, 5 city agencies, DDC, the Mayor's Office of Criminal Justice, the Public Design Commission, the Department of Corrections, and the Department of City Planning, as well as a representative from each of the 4 affected borough presidents and from the Speaker of the City Council. Meetings are going to begin shortly, and they'll continue at regular intervals through the release of all 4 design-build RFPs, which will occur well after ULURP has concluded. The design manager and DDC will present updates to the design advisory group. In turn, the design advisory group will provide feedback to DDC and the design manager to ensure that stakeholder concerns are being appropriately addressed. As I mentioned, as director of the Department of City Planning, I'm a member of the design advisory group and intend to play a very proactive role with the support of DCP's exceptional staff. Additionally, wearing my City Planning Commission chair hat, I intend to request presentations by DDC, the design manager, and the design build teams at key milestones in the design build process so that the commission can continue to play an active role as these designs are brought to fruition. Even before this application comes back to this commission for a pre-public hearing review session, I'll be inviting DDC and the design manager to present to the commission. We all have an interest in getting design build right for those who are in the criminal justice system, for the 4 neighborhoods where the jails will be located, and for the future of design build in our city. And with that, I'll toss it open to questions from the commission. Commissioner Capelli.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairwoman. You've answered a question that I was concerned about dealing with design build. Well, we're used to normally seeing something that looks like the building that's going to go up. And in this instance, we're it is a bit of a leap of faith as to how it's going to turn out. So I'm happy that you're going to be playing a role, were we to approve this, in bringing back to us the design, and that we'll have input through your efforts. So I appreciate that. Turning my attention to the presenters, let me just first say that without prejudicing how I will ultimately vote on this, I'm very pleased that the city has undertaken an effort to close Rikers Island. As a practicing attorney, someone who practices criminal law, Rikers Island is an abomination, and it's about time it's about time that this administration has finally taken up the challenge, as so many others have let go on for far too long. I deal with parents of children who cannot believe what their families are forced to endure. And with the indigent population, there are so many people who are in these jails who do not belong there at all. And it's simply because they're poor and they do not have the ability to get out for a relatively minor offense. And I'm very grateful that there are a lot of efforts to go on to reform that. Now, having said that, I'm a little suspect that all of the reforms that are being talked about are going to be implemented, and that the goal of getting down to 5,000 people is going to happen. I sit in court every day, and I see judges exercising their discretion and putting people in on offenses that are relatively minor, and given their income means, they're not able to get out. And if the legislature doesn't reform the system, that's not going to change. So, you know, I'm worried that bringing it down to, you know, a 15% number over the projected population is going to be enough. You know, we're going to be going through a legislative session during this process, and some of this may need to be rethought based upon what the legislature does with respect to bail reform.
Commissioner De La Hoos.
First, I just want to thank Ms. Glazer and Frank and Taylor for your presentations. Pretty thorough. I share many of the thoughts and concerns that Commissioner Capelli shared, and certainly as someone who has direct knowledge from a family perspective of the criminal justice system and how inhumane it is, it's definitely positive that what is being talked about here is more person-centered and justice-focused. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit, Ms. Glazer, about what other sites were considered in the process and why they were put aside. I think that would be helpful to know. And then what informed the plan to have an equal number of beds at each location, but a varying number of parking spaces. And then also a little bit of information, I think, about the plan to put affordable housing in the Bronx, and where the tow pound would go in the Bronx. That would be helpful. And then I think there was part of the Queen's presentation was that there was one particular facility that was more central, and if we could hear a little bit more about the purpose of that, that would be helpful. Thanks. Whew. Take a note.
So hopefully we can answer all of them. I've written them down. If we've missed one, we'll do that. I'd like to introduce my colleague, Dana Kaplan, who's deputy director in my office and has been leading a lot of the Rikers work. Yes, the city went through a pretty extensive examination of numerous sites. Approximately 70 sites were considered. There were sort of some key features for us that were very important. The first, that it be near public transportation. The second, that it be near the courthouse for the reasons that I went through. That it be on city-owned property because of the difficulty of of acquiring things. So for all three of the sites, we were able, to check those boxes. In the Bronx, the difficulty was that the existing sites, the possible existing sites near the courthouse, were simply too small to accommodate the building. And so we looked for another site that would have some of those features, and the Toe Pound was one of them. And, you know, we're currently in a planning process with respect to where the Toe Pound would go.
So in terms of the equitable distribution of beds, there's obviously going to have to be considerations as to whether there are people who will be placed based off of borough of arraignment or off of borough of residence. Oftentimes, there is a significant overlap between those two, that people who have are arrested in the borough in which is their home residence. That is not always the case, particularly in Manhattan. There's a slightly larger percentage of people who have arrested in Manhattan but have a different borough of residence. So there's lots of different ways that one could consider how to kind of appropriately plan for the future and balance borough of residence, borough of arraignment. When you look across the board at borough of residence, there's not a significantly dramatic distinction. It's a few percentage points, certainly, between the different boroughs in terms of borough of residence, but not so significant that we didn't think that it was appropriate to do an equitable distribution and then allow some operational flexibility in which, as much as possible, we're going to try and balance the need for people to be closer to their family members, closer to court, closer to service providers, and making determinations based off of borough of residence, while at the same time understanding that there will be times and in which, you know, people we would want to prioritize borough of arraignment, so that if people have a number of upcoming court dates, that can be afforded for. In terms of the number of parking spaces, it was really, I'll say that the prioritization or the impetus to really try to provide as much parking as possible is based off of some of the neighborhood and community feedback that we have gotten, particularly around the sites of where there are existing DOC facilities in Brooklyn and Manhattan. We have certainly heard that one of the quality of life considerations and concerns is the use right now of street parking for employees of the correctional facilities. And so as much as possible, we wanted to be able to provide as much parking as we could in order to offset any challenge of lost parking spaces. So really, though, it's, you know, based off of what is available at each site in terms of what could be provided. And so that number obviously ranges from a smaller amount, about 125 spots available in Manhattan, where you can also only go so far underneath the ground to do that below grade parking, to more parking spaces available in Queens and the Bronx, where there's just a larger footprint to provide that parking capacity. And then in Queens specifically, because part of the plan is contemplating that we will be using part of a surface municipal parking lot, the intention is both to provide the below-grade staff parking and then, in addition, to provide a multi-level surface parking lot that would actually provide more parking than what is currently available at the surface parking lot. So that's because part of the plan is using an existing surface parking lot. Obviously, there's a much significant number of parking spaces that will be provided back to the Queens location. In terms of what is contemplated, also in terms of centralized, in Queens, this is a change from, there's two things that are contemplated being centralized in the Queens location. One is we are proposing that that is where all of the women in detention would be held. When we initially had, for all citywide, yes, and that's about 200 women is what we estimate at the point, you know, at the point at which the population is at 5,000. I will say that initially, we had proposed that there would be dedicated women's housing units within each of the four proposed sites. That was part of the plan in terms of, you know, the thinking being that if we were, you know, part of this is about making sure that people are closer to the courts, making sure that people have access to attorneys and visitation, that we would want to afford that same access to the female population. We had smaller housing units within each of the four facilities. We received a significant amount of feedback from a number of different women's service organizations and formerly incarcerated women about concerns about doing a decentralized model. We heard pretty loudly that there would be a more appropriate gender responsive level of programming and services available if all of the women were at one location. And there was a lot of concerns about the vulnerability of, you know, if a facility is primarily, you know, men, that only 50 women who would interact with men in things like intake and visitation, that there was concerns about that. We did a lot of focus groups, both with staff and women who are in detention right now at Rikers Island, did questionnaires, and underwent a pretty intensive engagement process to now have determined that we believe that this is actually the most appropriate model of care. So we're not adding beds to the Queens facility. It would the numbers are consistent with the other facilities, but it would mean that the women were in the Queens location. That is where we are currently proposing that the nursery and maternity unit would be. The other thing that is proposed to be centralized in Queens is kind of a specialized medical annex or infirmary, although this is one of the things that in the DEIS, it disclosed that we are currently involved or in an active consideration process of other sites that would be more hospital-based and not detention facility-based as a possible alternate location for this site. And depending on what happens with the feasibility study, there might be a change made in that regard.
Thanks. Other questions? Commissioner Dweck.
Thank you. First, excellent presentation, and I echo Commissioner Capelli's comments about the need for reform and closing Rikers Island. A couple of land use questions. Just if you can clarify in Brooklyn on the bridge and tunnel, is it one or the other, and do they both serve the same function?
As the application proposes, it could be both. And they would both have the same function, which is to provide access to the between the courthouse and the facility. I say it a little bit differently. In the application below grade, it contemplates not only access, but also perhaps some of the services for the facility could actually be located below street level as a way to kind of help bring the height of the facility down.
Got it. I'm assuming that the bridge would be more contentious than the tunnel that's currently in place.
Right. We may see that.
And going back to the height, at 395 feet, Brooklyn, because of the small footprint of the lot, basically gets the biggest jump in FAR. And since we're demapping the street, has there been a thought to cantilevering the building in order to reduce the height, the overall height?
As I understand, no, because I think the idea is to maintain State Street generally as access. And then additionally, while the block itself, I don't know where the clicker went, while the block itself is predominantly the northern part of the State Street frontage is the courthouse, there is a residential building to the western end of it.
On Borum.
That's correct, right. Yeah, at the intersection. And so I think the idea is generally just that there would be bridge access above, essentially above 40 feet.
And one last question going to the Bronx. There was a small courthouse proposed for the facility in the Bronx. That is going to be accessory to the jail, or is that for other purposes? What is the purpose of that jailhouse, of the courts there?
The court, there's 10,000 square feet of court facility that's maintained in the proposal. We can get more info on the specifics of what it's for, but it is listed as a specific.
Could our mock Jay colleagues come forward?
Yeah, but just the other thing I just wanted to add to it was that it's listed specifically in the application as one of the permitted uses on the site. So it's not really accessory to the jail. It would be a specific 10,000 square feet of courthouse use.
Which could be used for any other court
if it's
purposes.
Switched around, that's correct. But it's listed as that specifically.
I can.
Sorry.
So, and I can give a little bit more context. Initially, we had proposed the relocation of the arraignment court to the facility. We are not proposing that. That has been removed from this plan. The 10,000 square feet of court-related services right now is represents, right now there's a parole court on Rikers Island, and so there is a court-related function that would no longer be at Rikers Island that we have to either relocate or identify an alternate location for. And so it is a very specific proposal for those court-related services.
So all borough court-related, or from any borough, anything having to do with parole would go to the Bronx now?
The court hearings.
The court hearings for parole issues would have to go to.
Potentially, assuming that we don't find an alternate location, such as a courthouse that could serve that function instead.
Thank you.
Commissioner Cirillo.
So I'm not sure who the best person is for the question, but this is more of a sort of procedural operational question. So if this proceeds through the process, is it envisioned that all of the demolition and all of the construction for the system would occur at the same time, or are there different years for different pieces of it?
Perhaps you want to just stay up at the podium for the balance of the presentation.
Sorry.
So the notion would be that it would be sequenced.
Okay. And this is a question, you know, this is moving the population during that period of time obviously would rely upon Rikers, it seems, unless there's a different plan. What occurs with the staff at the facilities? Are they reassigned? What occurs with the team of people who would be there on a normal basis?
So this is all part of the planning process, as you can imagine, sequencing it, both with respect to people who work there and people who are incarcerated is a significant issue. And so that's all part of what we're in the process of now.
Understood. Okay. Interesting, just to figure out what happens to everyone in the story. Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Rompershad.
Thank you for the presentation. I have a few questions. This will be for both of you. So I'm going to start off with the NACs. How is it to determine the number of meetings for each borough? And after each meeting, and you got feedback from the community, how did you approach it the following meeting? Like, did you address their concerns? Because I still see there's a lot of concerns from the community. So I'm just curious about that. Can you walk me through that process?
Sure. So I'll ask my colleague to do that, who's been leading that effort.
So the neighborhood advisory councils have been they started at the end of 2018, and they have been meeting monthly since then. For some of the boroughs, there was a request, and the purpose was to create a set of guidelines and principles. The guidelines and principles that would be distributed or will be distributed to all of the stakeholders of the ULURP process are considering three different things. One is neighborhood and design integration of the proposed facility and feedback on the facility itself. Two, the appropriate use as determined by the community of that approximately 20,000 square feet of community space. And then three, any additional investments or community considerations that should be considered as part of this process. There were some additional meetings beyond the monthly meetings that we would establish if the members of the neighborhood advisory councils felt as though they needed slightly more time to get through all of the material and be able to develop that set of guidelines and principles in time. So, for instance, and Manhattan started a little later, we've had meetings in Manhattan that have been more consistent with, I think, biweekly at this point. So in terms of how the agendas have been set, we've obviously been working with the mayor's community affairs unit and elected officials, other local elected officials, and the Perkins Eastman consultant team to develop proposed agendas to try to get us to towards the set of a completed document of guidelines and principles. Have obviously heard a lot of feedback along the way from participants as to what the best structure would be for these meetings. meetings and the best way to receive this input, so have tried to accommodate as best as we could. And all of the meeting materials, as well as meeting summaries, are available on our website of the Mayor's Office of Criminal Justice. So even for people who are not at the meetings themselves or are not members of neighborhood advisory councils, the intention was that any information that we were presenting on the city's plan would be able to be posted and made available, and that all of the notes and documentation of feedback that we received was also posted and made available.
Follow-up question. How many other sites in Queens did you look at?
So I will say that as it relates to the Queens location, just for the three facilities where there were existing DOC facilities, the criteria that we looked at across the board is proximity to the courthouse, access to public transportation, city-owned, and sufficient square footage to be able to meet this program. I cannot, there is a significant benefit to having that direct adjacency to the courthouse when it is possible. So for in the three of the four boroughs where we had an existing facility, an existing DOC facility that met that criteria of being city-owned, adjacent to the courthouse, close to public transportation, and with sufficient square footage, we did not look further. Now, in the Bronx, the challenge is that the existing DOC facility in the Bronx is the Vernon C. Bain Correctional Center. It's a barge located over a mile from public transportation, did not meet what we felt were the city's reform plans. And so really it was in the Bronx that we considered the most significant amount of sites, because we were challenged by having an existing DOC facility that met that criteria. I think, you know, Director Glazer spoke a little bit about why we ended up believing that, and, you know, believe that the Toe Pound location is the most viable site in the Bronx. But really in the other boroughs, when there was an existing DOC facility that meets this criteria perfectly and has that direct physical connection to the courthouse, that, you know, was really the basis of our decision.
Okay. One last one. From an architectural standpoint, what I'm trying to wrap my head around with all these proposed buildings is we have different heights, 450 feet, was it 270 feet? So you work with a bulk. You have a program that you're following. So I saw that, and for the Queens one, for example, they dropped it by 40 feet. So what, did something get lost in the program? Did they eliminate, you know, part of the program planning? Because we haven't seen any plans, so I can't decipher that. So I'm trying to wrap my head around, how did you establish that 270 feet would be the correct height? And is it gonna change again? Will you go lower? And if you do go lower, are you going to go wider? I mean, you just...
So we have been going through a planning process as part of a, you know, towards a master plan of understanding what would be the appropriate program that would allow the city to not only close the jails on Rikers Island, but also develop a program that actually meets our criminal justice reform goals overall. Some of the inputs into that has been intensive agency involvement, obviously, but not only the Department of Corrections, but also Correctional Health Services, Department of Education, DDC, Mayor's Office of Criminal Justice. We have done intensive focus groups with both formerly incarcerated individuals, service providers, family members, attorneys, met with the district attorneys in order to understand what are all of the kind of component parts of this program. And we have a program that has some basic parameters that include smaller housing units. Right now, they are contemplated at no more than 32 beds per housing unit, with a number of them that are smaller than that. Significant room for programming and recreation space, including outdoor recreation at every housing unit level. Room for visitation that includes places for children to, you know, visit with their parents. We visited facilities in upstate New York that have much more conducive visiting room, so that was part of the program. Obviously, the challenge of all of these things is that to make sure that we're providing for that type of programming and recreation space, we are constrained that has increased the square footage of the program itself. So we recognize now that at the same time that we don't want to lose the benefits of a borough-based jail system, we also want to be responsive to neighborhood and community concerns about height and density of the proposed facilities. And so we've been working very intensely with criminal justice experts, with our working groups that we've set up through the Mayor's Office of Criminal Justice, with some correctional experts, at looking at the ways that we could reduce the size of the program without compromising the fundamental benefits. And so three of the things that we did just most recently is we did reduce that inefficiency rate. We believe that with new facilities that have smaller housing units, that it is appropriate to have a 15% inefficiency rate rather than 20%. So that did reduce, you know, 250 beds citywide. We removed the proposed arraignment court, which did have an impact on space in the Bronx as a result of feedback from the criminal justice community. And then we centralized the women in the Queens location. The impact that that had in terms of the impact on height and density of the relocation of women into one location is that we had had a number of smaller different housing units of about 8 beds each across the 4 sites. And so although we're not changing the numbers overall, it's a more efficient use of space by having them all at one location. And so it has meant that at each of the 4 sites, there is a reduction now of, I think, between 30 and 45 feet per site. We absolutely understand that height and density is still a concern for neighborhoods, and so we are continuing to work and look at ways that we can reduce the height and density moving forward and make changes to the program. Obviously, our kind of fundamental commitment is we don't want to do anything in a way that would have a negative impact on the program, but we also believe that there are going to be ways that we can make decisions to impact the program and continue to further reduce the height and density of the proposed new facility.
Other questions? Commissioner Levin.
Well, I was going to start in with 3 questions, but this last bit of the conversation sort of leads me to, I think, a question that's on many people's mind is about the operational issues associated with high-rise jails. What experience has there been? We don't have any jail in the city. We don't have any jails of this scale. Well, I guess the Manhattan House of Detention is sort of like this, but this is an order of magnitude beyond that. What learning were you able to acquire and take advantage of about how successfully jails can operate at this height?
So we do, you know, it's obviously a good and fair question. I think, as you said, we do have some multi-level detention facilities, both in New York City, in Brooklyn, and in Manhattan right now, where there are elevators and, you know, and multi-floors. And there are certainly facilities across the country that are multi-level or high-rise facilities that we have looked at and considered. These are, you know, we are proposing taller facilities than those. Some of the basic considerations in terms of how evacuation procedures, though, would operate are things that are not dramatically different from what current practices at Manhattan Detention Center, which has several floors, for instance. But the master plan team has been working with the Department of Corrections and working with some of the elevator consultants and things of that nature to do kind of modeling of what evacuation procedures would be and you know, what the safest way to operate these facilities are. I will say that some of the basic components are that because part of this model is that a lot of the programming and services are operating at the housing unit level, that there is a great deal of the safety procedures that also are around, you know, the ability for there to not usually have to be a type of facility-wide evacuation, that there's a way in which incidents can be contained at the housing unit level or at the housing unit cluster level. There are, however, of course, evacuation procedures that are in place for a facility-wide evacuation, and the Department of Corrections has presented on them in some of the Neighborhood Advisory Council meetings, and we'd be happy to share more about them as well.
Thank you. Could I then put out my three questions, and they're not related to each other, so here if you want to take notes. First is my question in the Bronx is about the decision to dispose now of the affordable housing site. Got a lot of questions about how a developer will be chosen, what the timing of that is, and why would we do that disposition now? Why not wait until we're ready to actually select a developer? In Brooklyn, the reduction of the transparency requirement along Atlantic Avenue made me look again at the planning for the streetscapes around each of these facilities. And my question is about, and the indication in Brooklyn is that you need to reduce transparency to 30% to meet security requirements. So what are those security requirements, and how do they affect, I guess, in each of the jails, the experience that the public is going to have moving around those jails? Obviously, one of the features that you're working to achieve here is integration of these facilities into their neighborhoods. So sounds like there are some limitations that DOC operations is going to put on that. I'd love a little elaboration on that. And then finally, where is the city in the capital budget planning for building all of these? How are they going to get paid for?
So let me start at least with the first one on the UDAP. I think the general idea was that it showed a sign of sort of good faith as the kind of as part of this overall plan that the UDAP was happening at the same time as the map, as sort of the other zoning elements of the zoning text and map change, so that as part of the project, it wasn't that the city was not going to be doing these pieces. It's a general UDAP. It doesn't have a developer associated with it. That happens from time to time. But the intent of this is that it allows for planning for the site to continue to occur as for the overall development occurs.
Streetscape.
I mean, I think the it may be best on the to have perhaps a DOC kind of talk about, we can have it at a different time to have to come talk about some of the concerns about, as they were describing, as for security reasons about the transparency along Atlantic.
Why it would limit transparency.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Okay. And then third.
The money.
The money. And
It's obviously a big and complicated project, and it's not finalized as to what all the different components will be. And so right now, OMB is working hard to sort of think through and figure out what the actual costs will be, and that will depend, you know, some on what these, you know, next few months are and how the final plan turns out. We do have right now about $1.1 billion in the capital budget, but obviously this is an issue that's still being ironed out and considered by OMB.
Okay. Is that also part of the phasing aspect of this? I mean, there's the how you get it all built, but we'd be paying for these in phases?
So to come, how that will work out, and I think that's, you know, very much a budget question.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Rumpershad.
Sticking with the budget, that $1.1 billion, does that also include, I guess, the demolition of Rikers itself, the current prison that's there? Or jail, sorry.
So the $1.1 billion that's in the budget now is for programmatic things in both the borough jails and on the island.
Commissioner Deluz.
Following up to that, what are the formal actions that need to happen to close Rikers and stop the use of the barge?
I think on that we can ask the Department of Corrections. Yeah. Commissioner Eady.
Yeah, thank you. Just wanted to talk a little further about the design build process and how you anticipate that going forward, and whether or not you intend to have one master team do all four sites, whether you intend to have individual teams do individual sites, and what the process for selecting them would be.
That, again, is a question for DDC, which is why, as I mentioned, even before it comes back for pre-hearing public review, we'll ask DDC, the design manager, and now listening to the questions from the commission, the Department of Corrections, to come and give us more information in an upcoming review session. Other questions? Then I'll thank the team, and the application is certified.
Thank you.
We're going to take a moment to pause just for clear the room.
We'll take a 5-minute break.
Take a 5-minute break.
Yeah, no, I didn't realize.